For all the trend watching and future casting, it has to be someone's job to create the future, to come up with something truly new. For decades, musician and producer Butch Vig has been doing just that. He produced the Nirvana album that helped take grunge mainstream. He shaped the noise rock sound of Killdozer and the alt-rock music of the band Garbage. Vig says from the beginning he wanted to make music that was different from what he was hearing in the mainstream.
As you were, as I want you to be. I got inspired to be a performer and to get into recording from new wave punk music in the late 70s, early 80s. And what I liked about some of that music is I kind of felt like it was kicking against some of the mainstream music that you heard on the radio. Mom was a music teacher, and she bought tons of records. Everything from Frank Sinatra to the Beatles to the Tijuana Brass. And so I really grew up loving pop music, but when I really grew into listening to music that I felt I could relate to identity-wise, that's when I started getting interested in recording. As a producer, I recorded a ton of indie bands, almost all of them punk. The great thing about those records was there was just a sense of freedom. Some of those records were actually quite ambitious in left field, even for left field sounding albums like Killdozer's 12-point buck. Records like that are what got the attention of some of the bigger indie bands that I worked with, like Smashing Pumpkins and Nirvana. They fell in love with those Killdozer records I did. With a band like Smashing Pumpkins, they wanted to have their own identity, and they heard in some of those records that I was doing that they were left field and they were outside of the mainstream, especially at the major labels. With Billy Corgan, as he said, I really want to capture my vision. I don't want to adhere to what anybody thinks we should be or what we should sound like. And he wasn't really trying to follow any trend at all. And if anything, I think Billy wanted to avoid anything that he thought was a trend. But in the back of his head, I think he knew to really have some sort of success, you have to get your songs played on the radio. How can you do that and retain your identity and still start to find more of a mainstream audience? Ultimately, I think Billy was attracted to me because I did have a pop sensibility. And amidst all of the noise and chaos and the wall of guitars, I tried to really focus the melodic aspects. And it's the same with Nirvana. Kurt wanted to make a very ambitious record, but he wanted it to sound really simple. And I think I've always been somewhat of a mediator between artistic integrity and mainstream commercial success. Usually the term I use is focus. Focus the songs and really bring out the hooks or the melodic aspects that might give them a chance, at least, to get some more mainstream airplay or commercial success. When I was producing Nevermind, I knew the songs were amazing, but I had no idea it was going to profoundly change the musical landscape. I remember the week it went number one, I called up Nirvana's manager and said, John, is there any chance this could go number one? He said, not a chance, not with Michael Jackson. And next week, indeed, it blew right by Michael Jackson. After the success of Nirvana, it became apparent that all the labels just would change their direction, and they all wanted to sign alternative rock bands, and all of a sudden there were 1,000 bands that were signed that sounded like Nirvana. That happens all the time, where labels see a trend happening and a band that blows up, and then they just try to duplicate that success. I find it annoying, and I find it sort of flattering at the same time. What was really sort of difficult for me to get my head around is I got tons of phone calls all of a sudden from managers and labels, And they would say, we want you to produce this band. I'm going to send you a tape. You know, we really want you to do your thing with them, what you did with Nirvana. And I'd go, okay. And then it would be a blues singer or a folk singer or something that was totally not appropriate, that didn't sound anything like Nirvana. After a while, it got pretty annoying, and I sort of started looking for other things to do. I kind of did a U-turn to a certain extent. And then again, later, I did another U-turn when I started Garbage. And that also in itself started kind of a whole other trend of bands incorporating different kinds of styles of music and mixed all together, you know, beats and electronic and guitars. And interesting to have someone tell me that I have started trends, because I don't know when I'm in the process of making a record or working on something that it's a deliberate thing. There are some artists who are incredible at manipulating trends. I mean, look at Lady Gaga. She is the queen of marketing, and her music is not entirely original, but she's sort of gone back and mined all these references, especially like disco and dance music from the 80s, and kind of put a fresh spin on it. I mean, if you listen to what's going on pop radio with her and Katy Perry and artists like that, I mean, they all sort of do look over each other's shoulders a little bit, especially when someone has a massive hit. Sometimes what happens, if you want to jump on a trend, by the time you get your record done and out, it could have moved on to something else. I think in some ways it's a dangerous thing to try and duplicate a trend or try to jump on it. There's a whole new playing field out there now in terms of how you can market your album, make yourself known. Really, it's all come from the digital revolution. I mean, you can make an amazing sounding record in your house on your laptop. You couldn't comprehend doing that 15 or 20 years ago. I think it's pretty tough to stand out these days. If you go on YouTube, there's probably 5 million bands on there or something crazy. I don't know what it is, but anybody can post anything they want. Now, some people argue that in a sea of mediocrity, anything that shines is like a beacon in the night and people are going to be drawn to it. I don't know if you can engineer trends. I think that you can create a buzz. It's so easy to get a viral campaign going these days. And you can go from hundreds of hits to millions of hits in a couple hours. And does that translate into ticket sales at a show? Will people actually buy the MP3? Or are they just going to download it? I think that's what everyone's trying to figure out, is how you can actually make a living from doing that. Everybody's going to have to adapt. People still want great music. It's just whether you're going to be able to allow artists and engineers and producers to sort of carry on the way they did. And since I don't think that's going to happen, I think in some cases what might suffer is the sound of the recordings might start sounding more generic because everyone's using the same laptops and the same plugins to make albums. And there's nothing wrong with that because they can still write a great song, but it's less room for innovation is what some people might think. And there are people who would argue exactly against me and say, because the music is changing, people are innovating. I mean, there's a lot of new electronica bands like Skrillex out there who is doing great, and he's made these amazing, challenging, really cool electronic records, very edgy and distorted, and it's really cool and part of a new trend. And I guess anytime there's change, you're going to see new things happen. So when I talk about the sound of the recordings, I guess that is going to be replaced by the guys who can make great records on their laptops, and they can still write a great song, and if they can, they're still going to find a mainstream audience.
Butch Vig is a musician and music producer based in L.A. Garbage's latest album is out in the spring of 2012. You can hear the full, uncut version of this interview on our website, ttbook.org.